quality, but also will review some of the issues, structural for the models of coupling, changing couplings and mass scales that we can come up with. So here is the outline of the talk. I will try to sort of place it, the searches in the bigger picture of what's going on. And we'll spend in detail some time on the review of Bekenstein model, which is kind of goes at the core of all activity in this area. And we'll discuss how it's not going to give you 10 to minus 5 variations at redshift sort of one. And we'll talk about extending this model. What can you do? You can extend a more interesting sort of larger results, but not you lose predictivity. Then I will talk a little bit of discussing the naturalness of this model, or rather unnaturalness. And we'll spend the second part of my talk talking about shielding gravity and environmental dependence of masses and coupling, for instance, advocating the case that you can actually have a sensible, sort of semi-sensible models that predict very large spatial variations, which perhaps was not appreciated before. And well, time permitting, I will talk about this idea of infrared modification. So for me, the motivation, I'm particle physicist. For me, the motivations are actually related to cosmology, and the existence of dark energy is an established experimental fact. As of yesterday, or as of last week, dark energy officially made it to the Webster alongside with dirty bomb and others that I don't quite understand what they mean. But all right, so it's official. Well, the biggest, as the name suggests, right, it's not just a constant. Maybe it's a constant, maybe it's not, right? So we are at a very interesting crossroad in cosmology or in science overall. We're trying to find the answers whether there are very wide sort of degrees of freedom in the universe that stretch from one side to another, or it's just a damn constant, right? So nobody knows, and this activity is really at the core of the whole cosmology program right now, right? This is the main thing in cosmology. Well, if this the cosmological constant is not the whole story of dark energy. And if, for example, there are some ultra-soft fields that are having the wavelength as long as the life, the size of the universe, then that is, there is an interesting possibility. If you can couple these fields to the normal particles, you will see that there are interesting phenomena that you can observe, that you can have variations of couplings and constants, and you can search for that using atomic and molecular techniques and astrophysics, which we are going to hear a lot during this workshop. And that will, if you see the non-zero result, that would almost automatically say something about dark energy, that you will predict that a certain component, it's a question of how large component of dark energy, is really not a constant particle, but something related to quintessence like models. And for me, the interesting question is, are there sensible models that sort of further legitimize such assertions? And well, you can, those of you who don't worry about the models, you can ask, do we need models at all? And I'd say yes, right? I mean, the best example in physics is always QED, which is the gold-plated model for of the best standard you can ever achieve, right? Without wherever you can look at, you know, neurons circling around the accelerator and measure g minus two of the neuron, and you can look I don't know, some tiny effects in the say helium spectrum, right? And these two things are completely independent things, unless you have a framework like you.
Unless in heliums are some problems.
Right.
It's theory not well agreed to experiment.
That makes sense as well. We need models, but not to legitimize certain experiments.
Well,
the experiments are legitimate anyway.
Yeah, they're legitimate, but.
Makes it more interesting.
Putin never was a model. It was perhaps in the beginning not a theory but a prescription. It should be legitimized, but it was never a model. So it appeared to be consistent with theory experiment, not just a reason for it.
So here is the very sort of keenest connection, but for me that's where the main interest was. So this is the famous picture of recent advances in cosmology that became possible due to the major advances in experimental techniques. And we have this very wonderful measurements now of various components of the energy density in the universe. And over here, I put the slide that I stole from the Nobel lecture by Hunch, where you can see that there is an accelerated progress of in measuring the atomic frequencies, and here is the accuracy. This is quite an impressive slide.
From the hydrogen frequency.
I'm not making a one-to-one connection. I'm just suggesting that maybe we can, in the end, somehow use the harness that advances here to maybe learn something about this. Right? This is not a very serious slide. Right? I'm just telling you that I'm excited about this slide because usually when you look at these plots, they're going the other way, right? This is the really, really something unusual. Very well. So now let me address the question, do we need models of changing alpha, mass scales, etc.? Well, if you go to some different conferences as I do, you can hear of various crazy searches that the people do, or some of them are actually legitimate. you can look. It's just a random, semi-random kind of collection of various searches that people do. They all have this theme of long-range interactions, long-range forces. So you can look for the gravitational force, look for the field force that is different from the guys from exchange. That's one thing. There's a big program about going on about that. You can look at people do look at this big time, right? The deviations of the equation of state of dark energy from minus one, and that's like I said, the mainstream cosmology. You can search for relations of masses and couplings. There are searches of some exotic things like birefringent effects in the photon polarization propagating over large distances. There are searches of photons disappearing, oscillating into some unknown particles. You can search for non-GR couplings of spins to gravitational fields. All these things, you wonder why I'm saying this. They seem totally disconnected, but each of them are really shots in the dark, literally. And but once you have a model, then you can find a very interesting connection between all of them. So let me take a model. Model PD or theory? I don't know.
The upper left part is theory.
Okay, this is the theory, the rest is model. I'm happy with that, right? So this is the theory part, this is the model part. So on top of QED, I add one new axis degree of freedom, and I actually postulated V of phi is very shallow, so it's not like a Higgs field, which is still frozen, but it's minimal. So it's a scalar field, and I couple it to with different coefficients to F mu nu squared, F mu nu dual, F mu nu the electron mass term, and complex part of the electron mass term. So there's a four component, sort of four couplings. And interestingly enough, using this theory, you can actually calculate the local profiles of phi r, because there will be local profiles, because the matter will source the phi fields. You can calculate cosmological evolution of phi, because electrons, there are electrons in the universe that will source the evolution of the phi field, and so on. And then you will discover that all these previously mentioned phenomena are actually intimately related. But indeed, the new long-range forces between different from Einstein GR are mediated by these couplings. As we'll hear from Justin Falk, I should really include their V of phi as well, because that's may become important. Well, there are deviations of dark energy equation of state from minus one driven by these couplings. Variations of electron mass and alpha are really driven by these two couplings. The birefringent effect is this one. Photon scalar conversion is these two couplings, and the non-GR couplings of spins to gravitational-like fields, I should say, is C2 and C4. So, in fact, all these phenomena result from one new field and a few new companies. So this is a very important then to look for some frameworks where you can if you can be lucky and find a very good framework, some sort of a minimal framework, you can use it as a benchmark model for comparing various experimental sensitivities. Well, this is very important. The V of phi has to be very flat, right? Because if it's a Higgs field, what I'm talking about, Higgs of the standard, none of that will happen. Right. So what are the benchmark points in the change of alpha? Well, for me personally, it was the interest was driven by the work of the Australian group that we'll hear a lot about this in this workshop. And there is a conflicting result. And actually, after lunch, we'll have a big showdown. And I thought of Australian and Indian / French collaboration. I thought of having a cricket bats around each other and go at each other. But we have a very good Canadian proxy for that. That was very good. So we'll hear all about this today. And so for now, I was using this 10 to minus 5 at z equals 1 as a benchmark point sensitivity. All right. So here is let's look at the model. This is important to understand this model, because it's kind of mother of all models in this game. This is a Lagrangian. I'm not good with PowerPoint, so my help I can make it curl. So this the standard model of Lagrangian, on top of this, I slap in now the dimensionless field phi, where for dimensional reasons, I separate something that is almost like a Planck scale squared over here. There is a linear coupling to electromagnetic field. You can show immediately that this changing the photon propagation immediately results into the changing of the effective coupling constant. Right. What's interesting about this model is its extreme predictivity. So let's write down the cosmological evolution equation for this model. So this will be a sort of a covariant box in the down version acting on phi equals 2, and this term will source the evolution of this scalar field. So this bracket mean the average over the state of the universe at any given moment. Well, what's very important and very interesting about this funnel, that between 0.5 MeV, which is roughly the scale of the nuclear synthesis, and slightly low, and 5 MeV, which is the equality, there is no evolution of the scalar field, because guess what? During that time, and during that time only, the universe is dominated by neutral relativistic particles, right? They don't have any F mu squared non-zero on average, right? So that's very important. So it stays flat during this long time in terms of the redshifts between the BBM and the equality and the combination.
So this is not precisely true, because you have a subdominant contribution from, let's say, heavy particles.
Yeah, but they're really subdominant, so you don't. Yeah. You actually stop the. If you solve the cosmological equation, it doesn't evolve anywhere, precisely because they're subdominant. Well, then after the you have the equality, the non-relativistic matter starts getting important, and this F mu squared is non-zero over the the whole universe, mostly because that there is an electrostatic contribution to the proton mass coming precisely from this stuff, and which is reasonably estimated in nuclear physics. Right. So
the system temperature is when universe dominated by neutral.
Say again.
This area is when universe is dominated by neutral particles.
This universe is dominated by photons and neutrinos. There is nothing else.
Always.
There is nothing else until 5 MeV, when you have.
This is called plasma.
Yep.
If you
look at,
so it means that it's too few to have this plasma.
Well, this. If you look at the standard things, right? So this is the radiation that scales as the size of the universe, the size of the universe inverse size to the fourth, and this is the cube, right? And this is like equality 5 MeV. Over here, the universe is dominated really by photons and neutrinos, and this count is zero.
But still, there is a lot of plasma above 5 electron volt.
No.
It's a number of plasma particles. Energy contribution of plasma is small, because we have relatively few protons and electrons. But all of them are not coupled to hydrogen. When we are about 5 eV, you basically have electrons and protons per.
Yes. Yes, but they constitute a minor part of the total energy density, and that does not allow five in there.
So what is that in the Z scale?
This?
Yes.
The quality maybe by the small difference can help me exactly. Okay. This is like 10,000 or 7,000. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a little bit earlier than
So, and the other bound that comes from the 0.5.
This is the mass of the electron. And before that, you have lots of E plus E minus pairs, which in principle have part of their energy. It's hard to separate the mass of the electron into hard part and the electrostatic part, but there is a contribution there, right? So, so what I'm after is this estimate of delta alpha over alpha. And you can solve this equation, and because of this relation, you can find exactly what the answer is. So after the equality, you start seeing that here there is a constant term that is proportional to the number density of baryons and the electromagnetic fraction of the proton mass, and you get the.
Why number of baryons? When we are below 5 eV, we basically have hydrogen.
Yes. Yes, but that's what you use as a bad proxy word for hydrogen variance,
yes.
Right?
Yes, yes, no, yes, but hydrogen is neutral. And before,
this is non-zero even for the proton mass. So it doesn't matter whether your protons are inside
yes.
the hydrogen
no.
or outside.
This is non-zero only inside hydrogen, but above 5 electron volts, we have a belief electron and protons at a bigger distance. So that means that we can have
the atomic contribution to this thing is negligible. It is the nuclear contribution inside the proton that drives it.
Oh, inside the proton?
Yes, inside the proton.
It's MeV.
It's a
1 MeV.
It's the
atomic electron.
This part is basically the part of the proton mass that comes from the electromagnetic mass difference. Right.
Even nuclear energy.
All right. So let me look at this estimate again. So this is the logarithm of the redshift. This is the baryon fraction today, which is 4%. This is this parameter delta electromagnetic, which some people believe is known very well. This is few times 10 to minus 4. And this is the one and the only one parameter that appears in this model. Zeta F over M star times M Planck squared. So all observables will depend on this one combination. That's why it's very brief model. Well, now let's say this parameter is order 1. Then you have a very nice estimate because this is 10 to the minus 4 times 10 to the minus 3. This is 10 to the minus 1. So you naturally end up with delta alpha over alpha at the scale of 10 to the minus 5 at z equals 1. Oh, that would be very, very nice, but it doesn't work that way, unfortunately, once you start including other constraints. And here is the sort of a spin 2 exchange between two particles, right, which gives the usual Newton force. But then you can have the spin 0 exchange. And since this new scalar couples in a very peculiar way to matter, it actually does not provide the same attraction between, say, neutrons and protons, and neutrons and neutrons, and so on. And in particular, it's also coupling to the electrostatic energy inside the nuclei. Right? So the degree of non-universality or the non-universal correction can be actually estimated and compared with the constraints that you have on the non-universality of the electromagnetic of the gravitational force, and then it follows that this parameter that I was talking about there is 10 to the minus 5. So if you combine it with the estimate that I had on the previous page, then you have alpha then minus alpha now over alpha. Notice that the different sign from what Chastel and group was suggesting, but more importantly, 5 orders of magnitude below that. Right. So basically, this model, take it at the face value. The gravity constraints just kill it at the level that would be interesting for experimental searches in astrophysics.
What do you mean when you say 10 to minus 13? 10 to minus 13 or 4? For gravitational force? Or?
Yeah, it's the
what exactly
acceleration
over
acceleration is smaller than 10 to minus
13.
Well, you can also sort of estimate what the variation of this thing will be in space. And in space, this phi will follow very precise, say locally here around us, will follow the profiles of the gravitational field very well. And you can actually say that once you impose this constraint, it's also always going to be delta minus variation in alpha, especially, will be less than 10 minus 8 times the, it's not a lot plus, it's a variation of the gravitational potential. And so, you can sort of ask the question, what's going to be the variation of alpha due to the eccentricity of the Earth's orbit? And you can say, well, it's got to be less than minus 18, which is interesting enough. You know, it's not that miles away from the accuracy that Dominic Fox could achieve. So this would be a very, very important benchmark point. If the atomic accuracy can break this, not saying that you will find a non-zero result, but you will be more sensitive than the gravitational test, which would be by itself, very, very important achievement. Well, is there a way of making this difference kind of larger, enhancing delta alphas over alpha, and be consistent with gravitational constraints? Well, of course you can, this is the theorist, we can do almost anything. Right. So there are lots of speculations on how you can do that, right? So one of the problems was that evolution of phi in Bekenstein model was pushed by the electrostatic component of the protons, right? Which indeed participates in the new in the gravitational interaction. So what to do? Oh yeah, you can blame it all on dark matter, on dark energy, right? Because you don't probe the gravitational interactions all that far, right? So you can take, say, f phi times f mu squared, and say this phi times f mu plus, and this will be, say, dark matter, like Fatima, right, or whatever. And this way I will couple it, say, to dark matter. And then we'll actually allow to have results sort of as large as 10 to the minus 5 at the redshift sort of 1, and still be consistent with universalities, but just. Well, you can also use V of phi, and we'll hear about this on Nelson Moon's talk. And of course, this is just a standard game that is being played in cosmology. That would be kind of a quintessence like field, and you couple it to electromagnetism. You can get away with, say, 10 to the minus 3, 10 to the minus 4 couplings to the zeta f without violation of the.
Is it obvious that dark matter cannot have any electromagnetic contribution to this?
Yeah, no. Here, the idea was that let's take the dark matter that is really like Fatima, right? And then in that sense, it's coupling to, if you allow for some coupling of f mu to this scalar field, then it will be order one coupling of dark matter to the same field phi,
yeah,
just by supersymmetry, right? So what I'm trying to say that there could be models of dark matter where the coupling to this phi is not necessarily mediated by the electrostatic kind of part of the energy, but it's sort of one by definition from the start.
Right.
There is
more dust.
And there is additional enhancement order 5 coming from the dark matter abundance is quite possible. Right? And here, but the bad part of this, you can of course speed up this wave evolution of alpha and be sort of consistent with the benchmark's kind of sensitivity, 10 to minus 5. But the bad part of this is that the predictivity is lost, right? So you don't have a prediction of the sign anymore, and you don't have that much of a prediction of the size of the effect. You can just fit it with different things. And here, this is like a linear potential, no coupling to it. So at early times, it doesn't evolve, and then it starts evolving here. And these are various ways of coupling it to dark matter, and this is to potential and dark matter in order to have a really this is tuned in order to have a very, very flat sort of last stage of the evolution.
So this will lead to equivalence principle violation between dark matter and dark matter.
Yes, that's this.
That's also constrained in the.
But not at a 10 to minus 13 level. It's here. If I really push it, it sort of predicts almost like order one. No, that's not correct. Because Yeah, so it will be different. Dark matter force and dark matter baryon force will be quite different.
Right. So that's constrained at the percent level.
At the percent level. So that this mind you, this is 2001. So this might be in trouble.
You look at the dwarf satellite galaxies in the Milky Way.
Yeah, that's something I really haven't updated my knowledge on. Right. So now I come from to the tough part, and that is, you know, it's very easy to write down a model that changes alpha, but do they, you know, really withstand a very hard test by theory, in the sense that do they make any sense really? And well, you know, this is you can kind of start looking, well, are these models stable at the loop level or something, including hard correction times and so on? And then you see that in the Bekenstein model or any other model, which you can, if you sort of have phi fields coming in and your standard model fields coming out, really, these loops are more or less okay for any cutoff. But what makes it really hard is that if you just forget about these things and have the loops of that sort, like the scalar field, the photons, right, and the scalar field again, but these loops are divergent, and you gotta cut. It's an effective theory that you're not really surprised to see the ultraviolet divergence, but you know, you gotta cut it, and any reasonable cutoff, even within the sort of a standard model kind of realm that you impose, will give you the masses that are really large. You can say, what are you talking about? The mass of 10 to minus 20 GeV, or 10 to minus 12 GeV. This is pretty small. No, it's not. Because the 10 to minus 10 GeV, if you invert it to the distance, is what? It's 100 kilometers, or maybe 1,000 kilometers. And you went to something as large as the size of the universe to evolve now. Because otherwise, these fields would just go straight to their minimum long time ago and will be frozen. Right, so this is the what's called technical naturalness problem, right? You have a huge kind of radiative correction, and you have to kind of have a bare mass such that it cancels the radiative correction, so to a huge degree of practice.
Can I ask a really nice question? So effectability relies if it, your field only couples to massless particles like photons.
Still, you still
have a dim reg. It's technically natural.
No, you still have a problem with photons. It depends whether coupling is derivative or not. If the coupling is pseudoscalar. If it's the only exception here, if this is the pseudoscalar, if this is a pseudoscalar coupling here, then the correction is proportional to the, you know, it's a correction to the kinetic term of this phi field, which is fine. I mean, I don't mind having directions there, right? And that is because there is an extra symmetry, shift symmetry that protects it, right? And for scalars, I mean, I wish it were true, but it's not. So, the conclusion of that part, it's easy to write down a model that for delta alpha, but try to find models of changing couplings that are technically natural. This is very hard, right? So, whenever you hear that, you know, string theory really predicts changing alpha and so on, and this is a huge oversell, right? There should be a running line underneath, you know, like in the TV commercials, that side effects include severe unnaturalness problems and so on and so forth. And,
so I mean, from strings, the explanation could not be natural.
These things could float around when we. Temperatures are on the scale of the of these particle masses, right? Which would typically be electric scale, but not now, right? That's the message. Okay, so what are we going to do with that? I mean, shall we just all, you know, pack up and go home? unfortunately, please don't. a sort of pragmatic person can say, well, you know, you kind of go on about this naturalness thing, but what about the main term that you forget the phi's, right? The ray is this. Well, you can say that's a zero. But this contributes to the total energy density of vacuum, and of course we don't know. I mean, it's not like a spotless record that particle physicists have here, right? No, quite on the contrary, we don't know what cancels. So you can say, well, I'll keep hoping that the solution to the cosmological constant problem would also somehow shed light on how this file will remain light. Right? This is sort of optimistic / naive approach. And you can also try to find models that are technically natural. It's very hard and try to maintain things. So this is the conclusions for the first part of point one. And it's relatively easy to write down models of changing models. And it's just not a big deal. The simplest model of this kind, Bekenstein model, is severely constrained by the non-universality of the fixed force, and typical sort of benchmark predictions are smaller than 10 to minus 9. You can speed up the evolution of phi by introducing a potential for it instead of trying to move it with the electromagnetic pi of the proton mass, or by coupling to dark matter, and this is modular adjustments are far less constrained than the couplings to movements. Predictivity is lost, however. Spatial variations are typically very small, and being again inhibited with after the fifth force constraints are satisfied. And models are really unnatural, in a sense that we can write them down, but it's very hard to make sense out of them. In terms of the self-interaction of the phi fields, how that we achieve the flatness and the potential. All right, so I don't know how much time I will have, but from the chairman, but I'll have a second part of my talk, and the objectives for my second part is...
You have 15 minutes.
All right. Not very small objectives, right? A shield scale of graphics. Well, we have this next talk devoted almost exclusively to this. And for me, it would be like to create more room for the forecasts of Del Powell, etc. And I would like to really have a look at models which couldn't have potentially the significant spatial variations over time variations. In this game, when there's no good theory, as QED is just all the models floating around, why shall we all concentrate on one and the same test, you know, of alpha and function of time, why not in space? Well, I gave you an argument why it's in Bekenstein model this way, but it needs not be so, and I can show you the models that can avoid this. And maybe I'll skip that. Okay, shielding gravity. There are two ideas I'm aware of that kind of work rather nicely. One is often referred to as the Moore-Polyakov idea, but it's really, Nordwedt who first suggested it. And here how it goes. So remember, so far, here is this OSM is just a generic operator of this terminal. So, think of this F mu squared or the Newton class. So far I was using the linear coupling of the scalar field to this, which of course creates an additional gravitational attraction force. Now, what these guys did, they said, okay, let's assume that there is a universal function that couples one and the same way to all matter fields and has one and the same extremum there. Cosmologically, what happens is that once matter becomes dominant, then this would become like a density-dependent mass term that will drive phi closer and closer to its minimum as the universe redshifts. So now the deviation of phi from phi zero could be really small, say 10 to the minus 5. And this way, you can naturally satisfy the you can satisfy the constraints from the gravitation.
Or you should not. You probably don't start too far from phi naught, right?
You can push it a fair way. Also in the past you had all these thresholds, and that always keeps pushing it one in one direction. It works. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. And then another idea is due to Justin. Stay tuned for his talk right now. And that's if you somehow have a potential, not every potential can do that, but effectively you can create a shielding due to the sort of in medium effect, where this part together with this will provide some sort of a stiff potential for phi, and that it wouldn't. The force wouldn't stretch over long distances. I should say that none of these two models have significant spatial variations of couplings to SMEs. Well, this is the idea that I like to sell a little bit. It is the work we published last year technically appeared in the journal this year with Keith, who unfortunately couldn't come. So the idea is that take the particle of the Moore model and really make it strong interacting. So instead of having m black squared in terms of the dimensional d phi squared in front, make it t b squared. This is a drastic modification, but it actually works. So what happens is that in this model, you will have like two positions for the phi field. So inside the medium, it will be in one position, and you can choose the vacuum potential slightly shifted, and that creates interesting effects. So, but the gravity will be healed in that way. You kind of think, or you make it even stronger gravitational interacting. But what it means is that it will run to the medium much, much quicker and stay there. And the interesting consequence of these models is that the coupling forces can take different values depending where measured at low and high density.
It doesn't mean density of matter. You mean something average of a big scale, or it means something local?
Local.
So it means that if we have, let's say, hydrogen atom in proton. It's
Not that local.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to each time you have to calculate the Compton wavelength of this field and.
What is that? See if we have for instance.
I'll
atmosphere. Atmosphere.
I'll come to this.
Okay.
I'll come to this. Okay. So this is the illustration of the idea. So in the low density environment, say in cosmology, this term is not important, and I'm talking here about sizable and not squared, so maybe not huge, but sizable. So it will be there in the vacuum position. And then once you switch on matter, say 10 to the 24 gram particles per centimeter cube, then your minimum shifts, but also the range of the force shrinks, because this will provide an effect. And you can kind of immediately estimate, so here's how the model looks like. It bears these features of the particle Gamow model, but the only difference is very strongly coupled. And this is an interesting parameter, the effective mass of this phi field in medium, and it's really composed of two parts, the vacuum, mass in vacuum, here lambda 2, and rho. This density of matter.
So Max, what is the speed of sound for this? Because you have a pressure from this B effective, and you have a density. and you can capture, and that should be part, that should be real. So have you?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's sort of that there must be consequences of for something like structure formation and things like which for sure. And I haven't done any.
But this could be more significant because the time scales here are much shorter. So I'm saying if the speed of sound becomes imaginary, then everything will go unstable instantly.
No, I mean, I know that the theory has good stability. You know, it has well defined vacuum, so there's nowhere to decay to.
But it could have a hydrodynamic principle.
Right, so I didn't go that fancy. So here's the estimate of the range for this force, or effective mass. So if I normalize rho on this planet and M star on the T, I get this interesting range, right? So it's a really, really short range force. So in some sense, it's not a chameleon as we hear from Justin Falk, but it's more like a strongly coupled version of what we call W, because there is no even mean in self-interaction potential for sure. So then, and once the force drops at this short distances, there is almost no constraints. And and of course, there will be an interesting change as the layer that will go from dense to very fine. So this way, you can actually have one value of the coupling of the mass in a terrestrial environment, very where the densities are high, and quite different values in cosmological settings, or you know. Interstellar medium settings where the densities are orders of magnitude. And what we did next is that we actually, we wrote down the model, but we had to analyze whether it passes some immediate constraints, like the constraints on the star cooling and so on. And the interesting thing here, that this model actually behaves exactly like large extra dimension model of Arkady, Hammett, Dwane, and Dimopoulos for an interesting reason, because the scaling of this dimension from front and star is exactly the same. And therefore, the constraints that we got from supernova cooling as I left the order of sort of NT. Interestingly enough, if the coupling of matter to this phi fields is quadratic, the only thing that you can have is a quadratic exchange here, right? That creates a 1 over r cubed force, not potential, not 1 over r, which is, again, exactly analogous for what happens with models with 2x dimensions. So I found it cube. But we also calculated the residual linear force out of the fact that the 2 minima, in minima, out of minima are shifted. What's the interesting consequence of this? You know, you can have different values of alpha in or masses in the different in the rarefied parts of the universe, but here on Earth it will be still frozen to one and the same value. So there will be no upper constraints or no material requirements as such, because they come in the cube chunks. So this is quite an interesting suggestion. So I probably skip cosmological evolution, but what I'd like to argue that even though these phi fields would be sort of thermally populated, they are not going to be immediately killed by the cosmology, because they contribute just a half of the degree of freedom in terms of like neutrinos. At the time of the beginning, but as the tests of neutrinos, the number of effective degrees of freedom increases, that the results it may show up. But it is also kind of interesting to mention that this might be viewed also as a realization of this older idea by Barrow and Mota, that you can still have a cosmological evolution of phi towards the attractor there, but while on Earth everything is already frozen stiff because this is a very strong attraction. So what I like to sell is that in principle you can try to do local tests, right? Nothing prevents us from trying to, you know, having alphas checked in the sort of a large vacuum chamber, because you can sort of recreate the low density environment on Earth and calculate how much of variation you will achieve in this model due to that. And you can sort of with a reasonable estimation of what the parameters are, you can get to variations maybe as large as 10 to the minus 16, which sounds small but not unthinkable for the modern.
Yeah, what do you mean? So it means that we can put cloak into vacuum, but already atoms which are studied are in vacuum. So I think we have. You need to put go back, and in this case, you lose accuracy if somebody will do a cell experiment. So we have results, I believe, only in vacuum.
But I mean, each ion trap is in vacuum. I mean, but yeah. not below 10 minus 11, that's the current.
You can vary the density. Right? You can vary the density. I presume there will be a Can you have some buffer gas that you
no.
can
vary
that? No. Yeah, you can have some abundance of that. You can have some
of that. Is kind of high density when you compare.
So you have zero vacuum, zero.
usually you start with single ion.
Yeah.
So I just come to another point that. Given that in this model the alpha depend or masses depend on the environment rather than on the time scale, you don't gain anything by going to very 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 high regions. Right? You can go and try to explore the spectra in the galaxy and look then whether alpha in the sort of interstellar medium is different from our alpha. This kind of tests haven't acquired as much publicity as this cosmological scale tests, but I'd say that these models are still viable and given this nonlinear regime that you can sort of shield the gravitational field away, and still these tests need to be done, and we'll hear about some of them being performed.
Just to comment on that, the reason, one of the main reasons they haven't been done is because there's no transitions to use in the optical, which are very sensitive to alpha. Having them redshifted from the UV into our passband, our optical passband, is very important.
I'm talking at a conceptual level, right? We can talk about an E over a D.
You can do it with Hubble Space Telescope.
It's difficult. But until this year, nobody has even bothered to do that.
Because it's not easy.
The other point is that when you look at higher redshift, where you gain is not from the accuracy you achieve in the spectroscopy, but when comparing with local measurement, you get the fact that you have a large time scale. So delta alpha by alpha dt.
Not in this model. That's
so when you make the measurement, even with a Hubble telescope, so you are going to get accuracy of 10 to the minus 5 or minus 6.
So this is not a change in time, right? Yeah. This is a change in space. So in which way, Given a good lines, I appreciate the point that you also stretch the lines when you
No, but Michael, the dot is different. You just choose other lines in the optical.
There's very few in the optical. There's only the calcium lines.
Sodium, calcium.
Except magnesium, maybe. But
all right, so I feel that I overstayed my welcome, so I would just my own welcome. I would just skip this. I would just say that might be a word, too. The models that I wrote down initially with phi mu squared phi two, this is from the point of view of field theory, these are high dimensional phi operators, they're non-renormalizable and so on. nothing to be scared because gravity is also interacting that way. But this need not to be so. You can actually, with changing alphas, you can construct models that are fuller and normalizable. And the model, for example, this is a model like you have an extra U1 sector, and you couple kinetically the vector field to the hypercharge field, and have some heat potential in this extra U1 sector. And if you make this heat roll, you actually will have an interesting effect in the electrostatic force. That this will create a sort of abnormal dispersion for photons. But this way, you can actually have manifestations of that in atomic physics, but not in nuclear physics, because nuclear physics, let's say, if this quantum wavelength of this field is much, much, much larger than the nuclear size, the nuclear physics will decouple from that model. So it's not exactly true when you hear, oh, if alpha changes, all the rest of the couplings will also change. No, not necessarily. It depends on the model. This is the conclusions. Again, models of changing couplings provide a common framework to study many different phenomena. All models share the deficiencies like unnaturalness. Okay, in the previous model, the unnaturalness issue is relegated to the Higgs sector of this extreme. To enable sizable dependence alpha rho and consequently allowing for large special variations, we propose a strongly coupled variant of Polyakov-Gödel model. And astrophysical gravitational tests have sensitivity to this parameter at this level, but not beyond that. And high precision tests in the range of alpha of rho in the laboratory and within our galaxy are possible and likewise.
Okay, thank you.
Your last thing, Al-Bukhara. Actually, there are plenty of atomic clocks which works in a completely different environment. There is cesium fountain, there is a rubidium clock, there is some lattice clocks, where the density is really different. Also, there are walls.
Yeah, but you always extrapolate to zero density. If you have a certain density in spectroscopic experiments, so you have corrections which real correct density, and that means that you cannot very well control the density, etc. You try to extrapolate to zero, and if you have a small background correction,
also you have a lot of walls because it's 1/q, but it's still long gradient direction. You can estimate the effect of walls if more or less clear.
Yeah,
but you know geometry of the cell. It's again very different.
Maybe in the interest of lunch, we could save this discussion.
In conventional spectroscopy, because you have metallic surface, you could have images or whatever. So it's if a problem exists in experiment, it exists for different reasons.
So maybe we'll have a break in this case. Say 5 minutes break, and you install your computer, okay? So okay. Five minutes sharp, because we can miss our lunch.
Okay, 5 minutes sharp. Right.